kids that come to our camp, you know, I tell them, I'm like, look, if we're in there to see you, we watch you from the second you get out of your car, the second you get back in your car. You know, we're watching how you treat your parents. We're watching what you do pregame. We're watching what you eat at the concession stand. You know, all those things, they're all important.
No good player has ever said, well, who else is going to be the shortstop? The best players just say, sign who you want. I'm going to beat them, right?
And the other thing for baseball players, if you want to be a great baseball player and play at the highest levels, then be an athlete first.
Hello and welcome to the Coach's Corner podcast, where the coaches hang out with Walter. Today's podcast is brought to you by the Baseball Blue Book. If it has to do with baseball, it has to be in the book. The question for you, are you in the book? Now let's join our host, Walter Beattie. Hello and welcome to another edition of the Coach's Corner, where each week we try to have a chat with college coaches from all around the country, not only to discuss the current state of college baseball, but also to get a little insight into their programs and what they're looking for with regard to student athletes that fit their academic and athletic profile. Want to remind everyone, you know, whether you're listening on the podcast or having the opportunity to watch us here on social media, go ahead and subscribe, especially with regard to YouTube and our podcast. We have a lot of listeners who find their way to our channel, and we would really appreciate it if you could hit the subscribe button and follow along for all of our updated content. Today, we are joined by a coach within the Big Ten, coach very familiar with regard to the Mid-Atlantic and East Coast area, having had coaching stops at Siena, Fordham, James Madison, really building James Madison up into a powerhouse. And now, the University of Maryland pitching coach and assistant coach, Jimmy Jackson. Jimmy, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you're very, very welcome. You know, I get a lot of questions, and this is a topic that's very near and dear to my heart with regard to youth pitching. And, you know, taking over Maryland and getting involved with the Maryland program this year, what are some of the key physical attributes that you're looking for with your pitchers, and what's your primary area of focus when you first begin to introduce yourself to a staff? Is it spin? Is it metrics? Is it pitch location, pitch shape? Talk to us a little bit about your philosophy with regard to pitching.
So I try to really keep it simple. I mean, it's something I've done for a long time, and I've kind of stuck with it because it seems to work. More often than not, it seems to work. But we basically have three goals as a pitching staff, which is win the first pitch strike, win the first three pitches, and then our K to walk. So it's kind of one goal leads into the second leads into the K to walk. I try to avoid talking about not walking people, making it sound almost like a negative in a sense about like, do not do something, don't do something. I'd rather focus on more of a attack type mindset in the sense of win the first pitch, win two out of the first three, and then strike them out. So we're talking a little bit more aggressively in the zone before we talk about expanding the zone. So that's something that I think we're trying to still instill in these guys here, even to the point of, you know, our catchers play a big part in that. I think that's something that's overlooked immensely throughout baseball in general. You know, the example I always use is we don't have Greg Maddux at the University of Maryland. We also don't have the strike zones that we used to have growing up. So our umpires are getting TrackMan reports sent to them, so they get tighter and tighter. And we also don't have the elite of the elite command. So when our catcher's set up, we expect him to be over the white, not set up on the black all the time. It's something I see in high school games all the time. You go to a high school game and the catcher's set up right on the edge at the knees. And if that pitcher misses by 5 inches one way or the other, it's probably a ball. So if you want guys to be in the strike zone, we need to make sure our target is in a big part of the strike zone. Honestly, that first and foremost is the biggest thing I've tried to instill, even before getting into TrackMan numbers and spin and motor preference stuff that we do here through Coach Swope, you know, that's all kind of become second.
You know, when Coach Swope took over the program last summer, and now you're beginning to build, and you're obviously in the midst of your season, you know, and he brought you on board, obviously, for obvious reasons, because of your past with regard to pitching development at all three of the schools that I mentioned previously. You know, in today's climate, we talk on social media, we see a lot of metrics. Everything is analytic and metric driven. But at the end of the day, those kind of topics, they don't get hitters out. What get hitters out are competing within a zone. And I would love to hear you kind of explain to those parents and those student athletes that listen, the importance of being able to throw strikes, being the importance of the development of the second and hopefully third pitch that you can throw for a strike, because getting hitters out is really all that matters at both the high school, college levels.
Yeah, it definitely does. I mean, and we're lucky here because, like, I've had, I think I've done a good job over the years prior to coming here as far as learning how pitchers move, how different pitchers tend to move different than each other, and then understanding biomechanics pretty well. So I thought I had a pretty good grasp on a lot of those things. So I didn't really, you know, make our pitchers do all the same drills. You know, we didn't have all the same med ball drills or plyo drills or dry work drills. We kind of figured out by trial and error what worked for each guy, and then we just ran with it. Coming here, the first thing that Coach Swope said to me when he called me was talking about motor preferences, which at the time I kind of knew the term, I knew the gist of it, but I didn't even know 1% of it that I later found out. And it's something that he dove into about 3 years ago, and they've been implementing with their hitters here and had just never really done it with their pitchers. Once I started learning that, it is now, you know, light years ahead of where I was before, just for the simple fact that now I know exactly the way that pitcher feels most comfortable, you know, whether it's parts of his feet, how his arm action should wind up in the back or how it shouldn't. Should we be working to create more hip shoulder separation or not? So basically it's taken me to another level as a coach, which I also think is going to take our pitching staff to another level. So yeah, once we know, okay, we need to be in the strike zone, we need to dominate the zone, but if we can be in our preferences as a pitcher, meaning moving fluidly the way our body was intended to move, that makes it even easier to be in the strike zone more consistently, because now we're throwing with less effort and creating better stuff with less effort. So that's something that's kind of, I think going to take us to another level with this program, because that's where I just think that, you know, the pitching side of things here has been good. There's been a lot of really good pitchers here, a lot of high draft picks and guys that are doing well in minor league baseball. But I think as a whole, some of that stuff was missing, you know, the depth.
You know, one of the things that, I mean, you have a lot of pitchers from your years at Fordham and Siena, and obviously most recently James Madison, that are not only at the higher levels of minor league baseball, but a few of them are in the big leagues. And so when you're out looking at pitchers, I get this question all the time. Are there certain physical dynamics or metrics that you're looking for as far as right-handers? Do they have to be above a certain threshold, 6'2", taller? What about the weight? Is there like a certain physicality? Do left-handers get a pass as far as the height is concerned? I have a lot of parents that are always asking, my son's 5'10", 5'11", he's right-handed. You know, what are college coaches looking for with regard to college pitchers when it comes to height and weight? Can you shed any light onto that topic?
Yeah, honestly, it's tough. I mean, and this is where I think parents tend to worry about some of these things too much, of course. Players especially worry about it, because at the end of the day, you can't make yourself taller,
right?
At least that I'm aware of. You know, but yeah, I mean, we're always looking for bigger, stronger, more physical players. I mean, all the way across the board, especially on the mound. And I think it's a huge advantage if you're 6'2 and above, because you could throw at higher arm slot, you know, as far as release from the ground is concerned. So whether that means, And you could be one of two type of people, whether you're spinning the ball and you're getting that ride that you hear everybody talking about, or you're sinking the ball. If you're a really high slot guy and you're tall and you have a, what I would consider like a power sinker, yeah, that's even tougher to hit than it is out of a 5'10" pitcher. But again, if somebody has the stuff and the mentality and they're 5'10", 5'11", I'm not going to look over them just because they're 5'10", 5'11". I mean, some of the best pitchers I've ever coached. Colton Harlow was a draft pick. He's 5'10", lefty at JMU. Shelton Perkins was a 5'10", righty, was in Double-A with the Orioles a year ago. I mean, it goes on and on. So, yeah, there's advantages to both. I mean, yes, if I was being picky and I was trying to say, okay, we're going to get 15 pitchers, I would prefer 12 or 13 of them be of bigger stature for multiple reasons. But we're always going to have some other guys that are kind of that average American height that are just as good. I mean, I'm sure you could rattle off, you know, 12 big leaguers and a couple Hall of Famers that are 5'10", 5'11".
You know, and you know, I watched it when my son was at Vanderbilt. You had Carson Fulmer and a few other guys that were of that mold, and you know, they could flat out pitch. So I think parents kind of get too caught up in that. It's about ability and physicality, and any combination of that will get you you know, looked at least. You know, I really think there's some exciting changes ahead for the Big Ten with regard to it's been always thought of as a power football type of a conference, obviously the national champion from this year, Michigan. But really, in light of the recent additions to the Big Ten, Washington, Oregon, UCLA, USC, et cetera, this is a big-time baseball conference. And a lot of schools are really putting an extra focus on the baseball. Talk a little bit about the excitement of the Big Ten really becoming that, you know, I would say really strong baseball conference. And now you have to recruit and develop into that type of dynamic going forward.
Oh yeah. It's a whole nother animal for me as a coach. I mean, you know, the two most Northeast teams in our conference are Rutgers and Penn State, and they have two of the best facilities there are. You know, what the coach has done at Rutgers here in their most recent years, building that program up, building the stadium, the setting. I mean, everything they have is tremendous. Penn State's playing at a minor league ballpark and has all the amenities. The Iowa program has really taken off in the last 5-10 years. They're nationally ranked almost every year. You know, I mean, it's up and down the conference. I mean, to be honest, we're probably the one that is the most behind when it comes to facilities, technically. I don't think that affects us in any way at all. Because one cool part about here is our field is right in the middle of campus, I think is a whole nother type of element we have that most don't. But yeah, the facilities, the amount of money that's being poured into baseball nowadays in this conference, I mean, it's head and shoulders compared to anywhere I've ever been and from what I've seen before. You know, but yeah, it's definitely exciting bringing those four West Coast schools in. Two or three of them every single year, top 25 programs, every once in a while in the World Series. And I think that's the biggest thing for our conference from a baseball standpoint. I think the more often you see Big Ten teams getting into the College World Series, because that's when millions of eyes are watching, as opposed to hundreds of thousands of eyes watching right. In regionals and super regionals. If you get to that biggest stage, you know, like Michigan did a couple years ago, and some programs have done, you know, years ago, but I think it's just a matter of time, you know, could be this year. I think there's three or four teams in this conference right now before those West Coast schools come in that have a legitimate chance at getting that far this year.
You know, and that brings me to recruiting. You know, there's been a lot of changes, let's put it that way. And a lot of changes that I think families and student athletes are slow to recognize or understand. And I would love for you, as someone who is very familiar with regard to the recruiting of the student athlete, talk about some of the, you know, it's a slower pace now. We're not in a rush. We're not chasing the younger athletes, the August 1st of the rising junior year. And with regard to the portal, it's really become an older, seasoned kind of student athlete that colleges are looking for. But more importantly, the process has slowed down. So I just would love for you to discuss that a little bit so parents can get a little bit of an understanding, at least with regard to your philosophy.
Yeah, I've tried to explain this over the years, like, you know, working camps or speaking at different events. I think that's where everybody kind of needs to take a breath and realize that every college baseball coach that's done this long enough can tell you multiple stories of some kid that they found through a non-big travel ball tournament or the fall of their senior year or the spring of their senior year, let alone junior colleges and portal and all those other things. So that's why the hardest question we ever get or that I ever get asked is, well, what else are you looking for in recruiting this year? You know, so in the 25 class, what else do you need? And it's the answer is simple. The best player in the country.
Amen.
Or the best pitcher in the country. If you bring me somebody that's 94 to 96 and they're 6'4" and they can't help but throw strikes nonstop, what are we not going to recruit them? Of course we're going to recruit them. We're going to find a way to put him on our roster. And it would be the same thing with a hitter. If you called me and said, hey, we got this stud shortstop. He's going to be a draft pick one day and he can do A, B, and C. Yeah, we're going to find a way to add him. So there's no such thing as somebody being finished recruiting for a recruiting class. And there's no such thing as it being too late in the process, because if they're good enough, coaches will find a way to add them to that roster.
And I really am so grateful that you were able to kind of shed some light on that. I think we have a lot of parents that are hyperventilating and they're being led to believe that they're missing a boat as a time parameter. It just isn't that way. And I think the beautiful thing about that rule change last spring that essentially now kind of levels the playing field, for lack of a better term, allows for those late bloomers to kind of be able to be recognized. It really puts the emphasis back on strength and development and skill set development. And on that note, as a pitcher, when you're really working or you're doing camps, at what point do you feel that my philosophy is once a pitcher is able to throw a fastball for a strike both sides of the plate, okay, now we can work on a secondary pitch. Where does the role of the changeup come into play with regard to your philosophy as a coach? I see a lot of kids wanting to spin it early in their careers, but I don't see a lot of kids working on the deceleration, within the zone. And I was wondering if you could kind of offer some tips for young pitchers as far as pitch selection and pitch development.
Yeah, I think that's the equalizer when it comes to pitching. A legitimate changeup or even splitter, you know, which is basically a different type of changeup. Any of those types of pitches are just at times can become unhittable. We have a couple guys here. We're fortunate enough that came in here with good changeups. And then we've developed some others and added some splitters to guys. I think you're 100% right. You know, everybody wants to spin the ball because they just, and to be honest, I don't know the reason. I think sometimes it's easier. I think sometimes it's just cooler looking because you're making cooler. The ball move a ton.
Right.
I was the same way. I didn't grow up going, ooh, look at this changeup I got. It was look at my curveball, you know? And I just think that's the norm, you know, amongst pitching. But yeah, you have to have three pitches to pitch at this level. You know, that's without a doubt. Whether that's two different breaking balls or a breaking ball and a changeup, you have to have that. And I can tell you right now, we're not going to have a pitcher ever be a starting pitcher for us that cannot handle more than two pitches. They better be able to throw three or more pitches in the strike zone. And one of those needs to be a changeup or a splitter. And I think, so again, not to like reference motor preference too many times, but us knowing their preferences and how they move, if they're a supinator or a pronator and things like that, so what their body can handle also allows us from a development standpoint to move faster. So for instance, we have three guys on our pitching staff that we know are vertical as opposed to horizontal. So they're more like an arm swing in the back, like a Nolan Ryan, not a big scap retraction guy, if you think of it that way. Yep. So more like Nolan Ryan. They're vertical. They're going to be a little bit more over top with their arm slot. and they're supinators. So sometimes it's difficult for a supinator to throw a changeup and get inside the baseball like we all teach, because that's, of course, into pronation. So because their hand wants to be supinated, where it's coming through almost like a cutter, so some of those guys cut their fastball, of course.
Right.
We've added a splitter, because you can throw a splitter in a supinated position. It's safe for your arm. It's safe for your elbow. We don't worry about that with those guys' profiles. And three of our guys have picked up on it literally within two bullpens, to where two of them have the best splitters I've ever coached at this point. And they started throwing them in November. You know, once we had their profiles, once, and don't get me wrong, we tried changeups. I mean, we tried 50,000 different grips, and they just couldn't do it. So I would say that might be a little kind of tidbit for a kid, is if they're really good at spinning the ball and their fastball sometimes cuts on them, there's a good chance they're a supinator. And if they are, they could try, or like when I was growing up, you'd call it a forkball. Right. You know, just try holding the big part of the horseshoe like a forkball and see if that becomes your changeup, almost fork to splitter type pitch.
You know, and I think this is so great because you are a, you know, a long time pitching coach. And I really think in today's youth dynamic of baseball, you know, we're always now, the vernacular is vertical, horizontal, all spin rates and Rapsodo and TrackMan and so forth. When you get student athletes onto camp, you know, Maryland camps, and I know this will probably be your first full summer and then ultimately fall with regard to your camps, do you strongly suggest that if a pitcher feels that they are of the caliber that Maryland University is looking for, that they attend your camps, or do you want them to email you a schedule so that you could kind of, how are you going to break down, you know, a student athlete? Do you want them to send you video? Would you prefer they come to your camps? What's your best philosophy for prospective student athletes at Maryland?
Yeah, I always like to see video first, just that way I can be honest with them about attending camp. By no means, if somebody sends us video and we think it's just okay, or maybe we don't think it's a good fit, I don't try to push them to come to camp. Just because I know it's more of a long shot for us to like them at camp. So right. I don't want somebody to waste money. But yes, if it's somebody that we're being told by a source, you know, we trust, a coach or a travel coach, high school coach, whatever, then yeah, coming to camp is the best thing ever, because you're going to have the entire coaching staff's eyes on you for the entire day. But then the same thing, you know, we need their schedule. We need to see them pitch in games. We have to see them compete. I mean, I know every coach says it and it's almost becoming, you know, like a broken record, but it's still and always will be a thing. You have to see a guy compete. And I'm sure, you know, we all see it all the time. You see on social media, all these guys trying to re-sign with pro teams that are 96 to 98. Well, they're not signed for a reason. It's not the 30 Major League Baseball teams aren't dumb. You know, there's a reason why some of these guys are not having full-time jobs with minor league, you know, major league teams. They're missing something, and it could be the compete factor. It could be the command, like we discussed earlier. Could be a lot of things, but we have to see guys in all settings. You know, camp is great because we get to be up close with them. So if they're on the mound and I want to run out there and say, hey, I want you to go fastball in, breaking ball away, and then throw a changeup. I don't care if he hits it, just do it. I want to see if he can do it. Or I want to see what his response is. You know, I've had kids look at me and go, oh, I don't really do that. And it's like, all right, well, on to the next guy. You know, and you see how they interact with their parents even during the lunch break. I mean, all those little things matter. You know, I think that's one thing that Maryland has been built on, probably going back to Coach Bakich, from right. him to Coach Sheff to Rob to now Swope, is they've gotten good people. Like Swope says it all the time, we are a people first program. And he is 100% right. It is not fluff. It is not fake. We genuinely have 38 of the best kids I have ever been around, like without a doubt. And that was something new for me. We had that at JMU. We eventually had that at Fordham in Siena. But first taking over programs, sometimes you don't have that. You have a lot of kids that maybe don't trust you or don't want to believe you because you're a new coach. And I've really lucked out here because having 17 pitchers that were already really good kids, just good people coming from good families, I didn't have to prove myself to them for them to listen to me. They just listened. You know, they all work hard. They all go to class. They do the things they're supposed to do. So, you know, when you throw in the recruiting part to the people part, I mean, it's all encompassing, you know, everything matters.
You know, I would love for you to share with, you know, you've been at some really great universities and colleges from Siena Fordham, JMU. What makes Maryland, in your opinion, special for, you know, a prospective student, not just a student athlete, but what makes the University of Maryland's campus unique or different in your opinion?
For me, it's just the best of all worlds. You know, I feel like every school I've ever, the school I went to, the schools I've worked at, they've all been great. Like you said, I mean, I love Siena. Coach Rossi, he's like a dad to me or granddad to me. You know, he's like the best man in the world. But again, really small school, kind of a niche type of place, private school, you know, not the biggest of conferences. Fordham, even better academically, enormously academic, solid conference, things like that. JMU was even better, you know, more things. But here we have, I mean, you have Baltimore 30 minutes away. You have DC 15 minutes away. You have two of the most biggest major cities in all of the world. You have the baseball field in the middle of campus, and then you throw in the fact of being Power Five as far as athletics are concerned. And it's a top, I think we're top 20 now, institution for public schools in the country. So again, there's not one thing that this school or campus is missing. You know, we literally have every aspect of what any kid could ever want. You know, if you don't want the city stuff that we're talking about, then you stay on campus. You know, if you want to get out and explore, you have everything to see. So yeah, it's just, and for me, it's home. I mean, I grew up 30 minutes from this school. I think that's one of the coolest things for our coaching staff that, you know, honest to God, I would say maybe with the exception of Vanderbilt, I feel like we're probably the only program that could tell you we're not going anywhere. You know, like this is our head coach's dream job. This is our assistant coach's dream jobs. Like, you know, there's no need for us to move on. And I'm sure there's a handful of coaches like that at different places, but I don't know if you could say that for four coaches.
I agree 1,000% with that. And that's really important in today's coaching landscape. So I'm glad you brought that up. But Jimmy, I want to say thank you for taking the time to join us today because it's really important. I really love being able to talk with position coaches and pitching coaches because it really sheds some light, not only for student athletes, but for parents that are looking to be better informed. And I think you were able to do that for us today. I want to say thank you and best of luck. I know you have a big series against Klosty and Bryant this weekend. And best of luck with your Big Ten schedule going forward in 2024 and beyond.
Yes, sir. And thank you so much. And I appreciate you doing what you're doing on social media. This is a huge help for kids and parents. So thank you.
Well, you're very, very welcome. I appreciate you bringing that up. And I really want to let parents know I'm going to have all of Coach Jackson's contact information in the description, both on the podcast and the social media. If you have an email you'd like to send to him, I'll make sure we have the email address there. As he alluded to earlier, if you're going to put some attachments in there, video, if you're a pitcher from the open side and from behind, always help pitching coaches just as a little tidbit. Be sure and join us. Over the next few weeks, we're going to have a lot of coaches from all across the country. We're going to kind of, it's in season, so we're going to try to get as many coaches as we can over the next few weeks. So be sure and subscribe and follow along and send any questions that you may have in the description below. Thank you very much.